The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you unhappy with your health and catch everything doing the rounds? Do you have a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Are you searching for a better way to manage your health? My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show, which is all about integrative medicine and cancer. I'm Robin Daly, founder and chairman of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. Each week, I talk to people from the world of integrative medicine, which means I get to speak to people from an enormous range of disciplines and professions who all contribute to this inclusive approach. Today, I'm talking to Beta Fox, who runs the Munro Hall Clinic in Bedfordshire, which specialises in non-toxic biological dentistry, something that many people with cancer take a keen interest in. I'm talking to Beta over the phone at the Munro Hall Clinic. Good morning, Beta. Welcome to the Yes to Life show. Thank you very much for coming on at quite short notice to talk to us today about your work at the Munro Hall Clinic.
Good morning, Robin. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very pleased to be on your show.
Great. So, the British Dental Association describes mercury amalgam as one of a range of safe and effective filling materials that are available to dentists. And they go on to say that they've worked alongside the Council of European Dentists to avoid a full ban of dental amalgam, which had been proposed under EU regulations. But it's now actually legal to use it for children and pregnant women in the UK, I understand, although in some other countries in Europe, it's been banned altogether. So many people, it would seem to them fairly obvious that since mercury is one of the most toxic substances around, one of the last places you'd actually want it is in your mouth. So why do you think the BDA is so determined to carry on using it with all the attendant risks, both to the patients and to them, the practitioners themselves?
Well, I think what it is, I think it's the same in America, really. If you can imagine, I always say this to my patients as well, if the NHS wasn't allowed to use amalgam fillings, for instance, then it would become very, very costly. And with an NHS who's already struggling with finances, but for one thing, and that's something to bear in mind, financially, it's yes. just not be viable, really. And I don't know. I mean, I know in America, the ADA would be put in a very, very difficult position as well if you know, all of a sudden they'd say amalgam is banned. So it is just not safe. I mean, why would you ban it for children and pregnant women and discriminate others?
Right. I mean, it is a bit of a red flag, isn't it? The fact that it has been banned for children and everything does say there's a definite acknowledgement there that there's a problem. Exactly. Well, why is it a problem for children and not for anybody else? Well, it is clearly there's no dividing line, really, although it may be more problematic for children. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, but also, if you think about it, I mean, I studied and qualified in Sweden, and I think it was about 20 years ago it was banned in Sweden.
20 years, wow.
Many years ago anyway. I don't exactly, excuse me, remember what year it was, but it was... They did try to ban it on health grounds, but it was never successful. And right. then in the end, it was banned on environmental grounds.
Right.
But then you kind of think, if it's banned for environmental grounds, how can it be safe in the mouth of your body?
Right.
That's Yeah, exactly. That begs that question, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It sort of pretends that the environment and us are separate and not to do with each other, which is hardly the case.
Well, you ban it for a reason, for environmental grounds, you know, in the first place.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that we don't breathe, so that we don't breathe it in, and so on, so that we're not exposed to it. So in the end, we're actually exposed to it internally.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Okay, so Munro Hall is a lot more than just a dentist practice. It's got a long history in the field of mercury-free dentistry, in detoxification, in immune stimulation, and more, all of which I do want to talk about today, as much of it is of great interest to people with cancer, which is what this show is about. But first, I'd like to ask what brought you into this field.
Well, I actually felt I had issues with mercury myself. We know that, yes, we know that breathing mercury, I mean, the lungs are the worst barriers, so it just doesn't filter anything out of the mercury you breathe in.
Right.
So it goes straight into the bloodstream, whereas you, in a way, be safer to swallow it than breathing it in.
Wow. Okay.
So as a dentist, you can imagine, you know, you're basically exposed to the vapor all the time.
Yes.
When you, and we weren't told to chunk it out, so you'd be grinding it with a drill.
Right.
So the vapor would be absolutely astronomical level wise.
Right.
I didn't used to. I mean, in Sweden, I wasn't taught how to, you know, place them out them, so I had to learn when I came to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wasn't doing much by way of removing amalgam. I mean, there was, of course, here and there, but and then I started working in a fairly cosmetically focused dental practice in a rather affluent area, and mm-hmm. So a lot of people were asking for their amalgams to be removed for cosmetic reasons.
Right.
And if there were other reasons, I wasn't really aware of that. It was mainly that. And so I was all of a sudden removing a lot of amalgam fillings and replacing them, you know, with white fillings and so on, or ceramics and things like that. So that place was pretty much metal-free in a way. Apart from dental implants. So I was removing a lot of amalgam fillings all of a sudden, and I was getting increasingly ill, really.
In what kind of way? What sort of symptoms?
Well, for one thing, short-term memory was totally affected, and nausea was another thing. After a lot of concentration, all of a sudden I was having nausea. And and skin lesions. So I started having very strange skin lesions and went to a private dermatologist who couldn't figure out what they were. And she said it looks like something autoimmune. And when the histology results came back, it just confirmed lots of inflammatory cells basically in those lesions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, quite a few things going on, and it was just getting worse, increasingly worse. So, along with other factors, I just basically had to stop working and, stop working altogether. So that's how it all
severe.
Started, my interest.
And just out of interest, what did you do to resolve that situation?
Well, lots of rest, and no exposure to mercury.
Right.
By default.
Yeah, because of your work, yeah.
And then I came across Munro Hall Clinic, to be honest with you. And
okay.
I still had a couple of tiny, tiny little amalgam fillings left.
Mm-hmm.
I had some metal underneath some of my crowns. So I just basically replaced everything with BPA-free composite fillings and ceramics and so on.
Right, right. And you slowly recovered?
Well, it was a very, very gradual, slow recovery, lots of supplements and, lots of rest and, healthy exercise. Eventually, I changed my diet. The more I read about things, the more, convinced I was how lifestyle had to change as well. It's not just, one thing. It's a multitude of things. And I changed my diet completely and things got gradually much, much better.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Well, it is extraordinary in a way when you think of, one person, when they go and have a filling removed or whatever it is, of course, they get horribly exposed to mercury. But actually somebody doing the job is actually, experiencing it, every time they do it. And so you'd think the BDA was pretty interested in protecting their members from such a risk.
Absolutely. I think they refer to science and studies or whatever. I just don't think there's enough interest, or there's certainly not enough financial interest, or quite the opposite. Maybe there is absolutely no interest whatsoever to prove that, because it would be catastrophical to NHS funding and so on.
All right, well, that's how it is. So I've known about the Munro Hall Clinic for at least 15 years. Can you fill us in a bit on the background story of the clinic?
Yes, well, I mean, I took over a couple of years ago, and before that, the owners basically introduced the whole metal-free, amalgam-free dental treatments alongside with vitamin C infusions, which are administered intravenously.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make the whole procedure very safe. And so it was at the forefront of
it
really.
It was.
Yeah, so people, sought them out, and I believe they have patients from all over the world, and I still see some people from Norway, for instance, mm-hmm. Sweden. They were very, very successful at, this procedure.
Mm.
And people, I think, knew of that. I mean, you've got to remember, this was before the whole internet era as well.
Right. When did they actually start then?
I think about 20 years ago.
20, right. Yeah.
Yes. And there's a book written about their, how they started and how it all came about and how they treated people, really.
All right. I'll look that out. Mm. Okay. Fantastic. So at the heart of the clinic's work is the fact that you offer mercury-free dentistry, even metal-free dentistry, in fact. So could you explain in detail now what are the potential hazards associated with different metals, including, of course, mercury?
Well, I mean, short-term memory loss is something I experienced myself. We're now allowed to say that there's a link between mercury exposure and neurological disorders. So that we're allowed to say. We're not allowed to say that if amalgam fillings cause neurological disorders such as MS, dementia, Alzheimer's and those things. So that's quite an interesting fact that we're now allowed to say that.
Right.
Yes, and if you then think about dental implants now, titanium, commercial titanium is never pure titanium. You could have nickel. And if you think about so many people with nickel allergies, there's a lot to learn about this. I would strongly suggest to actually read the book that Munro Hall doctors wrote, which is called Toxic Dentistry Exposed.
Toxic Dentistry Exposed. Okay, yeah.
And in there, there's a lot more about it. But the point that, where our forte is that we remove metals safely. So the patient, for instance, has an oxygen mask, provided with an oxygen mask while we remove anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're covered, completely covered, skin that's covered, so you can still absorb through the skin. We all know, why do we use creams? It's because we do get absorption through the skin as well.
So
we cover the skin. We provide patients with this vitamin C, high dose vitamin C infusions, which actually binds to the mercury, and so anything that goes into the bloodstream still gets safely eliminated from the body by this administration. And so we do, there's a, I don't know if you're aware of it, there's an organization called International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.
Okay. What do they have to do with you? Or are you
so
with them?
So I'm a member, I'm a member there.
Okay.
Of them. And so they have a protocol called SMART Protocol.
Yes.
We follow, we're going to become certified eventually, but we basically follow those recommendations. And that is to do, you know, covering the patient up, and the oxygen mask that I mentioned, extraction fan, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we pretty much follow that protocol.
Right.
And there's a lot more information for patients there as well about the things that we follow. And there aren't many dentists in the UK who are actually members, which is quite interesting. But right.
I mean, there are quite a few dentists who would sort of sign up to being mercury-free dentistry, but this is an international standard. Is it very demanding to meet the standard?
This SMART protocol, you need to become certified, and we're certainly going to become certified. But when I looked at what the guidelines are for it, for instance, we follow almost, I'd say, 99% of it. Everything we don't follow at the moment is covering the whole face.
Right.
Which is a bit tricky when you're trying to get into the mouth.
Yes. Well, it seems,
so that's the only thing we don't
care. Yeah, it seems the whole thing is quite a balancing act to actually pull this off, to take out something as toxic as mercury without getting any kind of exposure to it in the meantime is quite a tough call, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, being mercury-free, you can be mercury-free. I was mercury-free, you can say I was metal-free in the previous place I was working at. But the problem was that, I was exposed to it quite heavily. The patient didn't have an oxygen mask, so they were breathing it in as well.
Yeah.
And so you can be mercury-free, as in remove the amalgam and replace it with something safer. But what about the process?
Yes.
During the process,
yes.
You basically get acute exposure, very, yes, very high doses.
Yeah, much worse than just leaving them alone, in fact.
Absolutely, you're dead on right. I always say that. If you're not going to do it safely, you might as well keep them in.
Yeah, that's a bit like having an asbestos roof on your house. You know, if you're going to take it off badly, you'd be better to leave it alone.
Absolutely, totally.
Yeah. Okay, so just to quickly cover the other kinds of metal, though, you mentioned titanium and one other. What was the other you mentioned?
Yes, I mean nickel.
Nickel,
you can have nickel in implants.
Yes, what are the problems with these other metals? Is it simply that people are allergic to them, is that it?
No, I mean, we just, believe metal belongs in robots, not in a human.
fair comment.
Yes, I mean, there are a host of reactions to, from what I understand, to palladium as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that the Munro Halls, my predecessors saw a lot more. Because, they've been doing it for 18 years, so they saw a lot of patients with that sort of pattern of problems. Now, I don't, I haven't run any studies on that sort of thing, but
right.
I just think, metal just doesn't belong in someone's mouth.
Mm, interesting. So it's a slightly different problem in a way to the mercury, which is actually a known lethal toxin. These, it's more like, well, we just don't get on with them that well. So it's a funny thing to have in your body permanently if you don't have to.
Well, it's the most potent neurotoxin known to man.
Oh, it's right, top of the list, mercury, right, okay.
Yes, and that's why there's such precautions. If you break a thermometer,
yes,
then you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember as kids it was quite a fun thing to play with, a bit of mercury. So hopefully the times have changed on that, though. So can we look at the other side now? We talked about taking the stuff out. Now, so what are you putting in and why?
Well, I mean, we ceramics are very safe, very inert. You still have the cement to consider, but ceramics are very, very inert. That's mm-hmm. a very well-known fact. It is a bit brittle, so have to be careful. See, there's a balancing act between mechanics of dentistry,
yes,
and toxicology. Really, it's really a balancing act. And so, ceramics are very inert, but sometimes you can't use them because they're brittle. And say if someone grinds their teeth heavily, it's not maybe suitable because they can fracture it basically.
Okay.
And then, of course, sometimes it's a matter of cost as well. It costs more.
Mm-hmm.
So then I will advise composite fillings. But composite fillings, which are basically white, resin-based white fillings.
Okay. As
people refer to them. And then I'll use that. And they're very good nowadays. But, of course, they have to be BPA-free, fluoride-free, and so on. Yeah, so we have 2-3 choices there, material wise, mm-hmm. and just a matter of cost again. You know, there's one I ordered from Switzerland, and costs come into it as well.
Yeah, of course.
But they are completely BPA free and fluoride free, basically.
Okay, so the problems with BPA being, do you want to just tell us a bit about it?
Sure. So BPA mimics female hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Estrogen, the way I understand it. So it can really, really affect someone who's already struggling with hormones. And as we know, women can be struggling with perimenopausal kind of symptoms. And so it's not ideal, which is why also people are recommended not to drink, you know, from plastic bottles or that sort of thing, because it's the same thing. BPA is released and goes straight into your body, basically.
Right. Okay. Apart from amalgam fillings, the other subject in dentistry that we hear quite a bit about in integrative medicine circles is the potential of root canal procedures to be the source of long-term problems. Is this something that concerns you, and can you help with these problems?
Yeah, so root canals, I mean, that's a real controversy there. Our point with why we don't agree with it is you can't get these canals 100% sterile, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And if your immune system is compromised already, then that is going to really play a very, very high risk. So you imagine a molar tooth has 3 roots and right. often more than 3 canals. So if it's hard to get one canal 100% sterile, and then you have 3, 4, sometimes 5 canals that are non-sterile, in a body that's already compromised immunologically, then that's just, you know. And there are studies, from what I understand, that actually show link between breast cancer and root canals, for instance, on the same side where the root canal is.
Mm.
And the other thing is the way dentists assess root canals is by radiographs, for instance.
Yes.
Symptoms, of course, but also radiographs, x-rays. And for an infection to show on a 2-dimensional x-ray, it has to reach a certain size.
Okay, so it's already quite bad before it's detected.
Exactly. So a lot of these infections actually go amiss. So patients who come to, I mean, we do a toxicity test for that as well. It's a German tester. But, you know, often you see it on the x-ray. And if you absolutely can't see it, then sometimes we refer for a 3D scan.
Mm-hmm.
And then it definitely shows.
Right. And so a lot of people, of course, have had root canal work, unaware of any particular long-term risk associated with them. Is there anything they can do about it retrospectively? And is there anything you can do about it retrospectively?
Well, you know, if these teeth are infected, then we tend to, you know, give the option of, you know, either be referred out if they want to re-root canal. For whatever reason, we tend to then offer the extraction option.
Right.
And when we extract, the socket has to be very well cleaned from these toxins. So it's not enough just to extract the tooth. It has to be cleaned out properly. The actual bone has to be cleaned out really
right.
well.
Right.
Of course, we have these vitamin C infusions, of course, alongside.
Right. So basically, that obviously it's a sort of tooth-conserving procedure to do a root canal, but actually Munro Hall would say, well, the price of it is too high in a way, and you should have it extracted, really, if it's in that bad condition.
Yes, I mean, we do tend to explain. I tend to show the infection, you know, the evidence of infection to the person, and... there are, you know, options for replacement nowadays. So,
yes,
you know,
yes.
You wouldn't keep an infected arm, would you?
No, I see what you're saying.
Or dead piece of, you know, bone or dead piece of anything in your body.
No. Okay, I understand. And so you talk about it being very effectively cleaned out. What's that mean? I mean, obviously you're removing a certain amount of material that's actually not great, but what do you do in order to ensure that the infection is really dealt with?
Well, we manually clean really, mm-hmm. really well, and then we ozonate the socket. So manual, mechanical, physical cleaning with
yes.
instruments, and then... we ozonate the area as well. That's
so,
the final, you know. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that, ozonating, what it consists of, why you do it, how it works?
Yeah, sure. So ozone, it's a highly antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, you know, just really, really antimicrobial kind of thing. It's a gas. It's a very safe gas. It's...
Mm-hmm.
It's like oxygen, but it has three atoms, three oxygen atoms, and it's quite volatile. It just gives off that third atom, so it wants to go back to being, you know, oxygen, O2.
Right.
So it basically kills off these bacteria. So it's an oxidant, and bacteria don't have the antioxidant for it, so it just attacks those bacteria really effectively.
Right.
Whereas our body cells do have the antioxidant for it in the cell walls. So it just kills off really effectively these bacteria that we're
right.
looking for, mostly anaerobic bacteria, really, we're looking for.
Mm. So the fact that healthy cells are actually okay with the ozone means that it's a very targeted therapy.
It is indeed very, very targeted. Mm. And I know in Germany there are ozone centres for, you know, cancer patients go and have it put into their blood, basically.
Mm.
And I believe it's sort of possibly banned in the UK. It's not really done, I don't think, officially
I mean,
in the UK.
There's plenty of oxygen therapy going on, but I'm not sure about ozone therapy in the UK. Hmm. All right. So can I ask you, Peter, about... you've mentioned several times the vitamin C infusions. Do you want to just say a little bit more about the kind of thinking behind that, what it's actually doing, when you use these, how it adds to the treatment that you're doing anyway?
Sure, it's not your sort of 250 milligram kind of vitamin C. It's really high dose. The minimum we administer is 35 gram.
Yeah.
And it's given intravenously, and it's run. It has to be run really slowly, drip by drip.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, it just supports the system. It's a really good detoxifying agent, really. And it apparently works on many, many levels, but we know that it's not just a vitamin as such when it's administered the way it is. So it supports the immune system. It supports you when you're exposed to any kind of toxins from metals, be it from infection or metals. And it also has shown to be amazing for healing. So
right.
When we extract a tooth, for instance, and we expect the closure of that gum to close the socket, that takes time.
Yeah.
And as a dentist, you've seen it, obviously, you're taking the patient back maybe 10 days later or whatever, and you kind of expect, okay, it's not complete closure yet, but, it's going there.
Mm-hmm.
With the vitamin C, I see starting of closure literally the day after.
Right. Mm, amazing. And do you use any other types of supplements or infusions as well?
Well, yes, there are supplements that we, again, it's part of the whole supporting the system mm-hmm. type of thing. Can be selenium and vitamin C again, and magnesium. It's a program that we have, basically, and mm-hmm. that includes all these things, and various oils and primrose oil and so on. So there's a whole lot of supplements included in that program that we really recommend that the patient has a few weeks before treatment and a few weeks after treatment.
I see. Okay, so it's carefully thought through. Sounds great. Do you have anything to offer to somebody who has been severely exposed to mercury?
You mean through dental amalgams?
Well, through whatever way. I mean, it's just it happens to be the toxin that you're helping people to avoid. So I just wondered if somebody, for whatever reason, has been exposed heavily to mercury, maybe badly removed amalgams, are you able to help them? I mean, the toxicity doesn't disappear that quickly, I understand. It hangs around, basically. So are you able to help with that?
Yeah, so, yes, you're right about that. And mercury is stored. The body likes to store mercury in fatty tissue, for instance. Mm,
right.
And I believe there's a clever way of the body to work. It just wants to protect all the vital, important organs and by storing it in the fat. That actually protects the organs really well, because it's just stored away from all the organs. I can't really, as a dentist, we can't really, we can sort of recommend based on my own kind of experiences and what other patients have done successfully.
Right.
But as a dentist, I can't really say, and I know people talk about chelation, for instance, if that's what you were thinking of. I would be very, very careful about that sort of thing. There's a certain program, I don't want to name any names, but there's a certain protocol that's very, very strict and so on. And I just wouldn't have heard horror stories from that sort of thing. So very careful about those things. But then there are others that seem to be working quite well.
Okay, so it's definitely not a DIY process. You need to talk to an expert, and you need to talk to a good expert as well. That's what I've got from
Absolutely.
What you said. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Be very careful, basically, with that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Obviously, things, approaches like high-dose intravenous vitamin C are things that people with cancer want to do quite apart from their dentistry. Are you able to offer it independent mm-hmm. of any dentistry?
We can only offer it in association with dentistry. But say someone comes and has cancer and is having their amalgams removed as a as part of their this journey. You know, then we can sort of keep supporting them, can't we? Because of the work that we do, and that has then twofold effect.
Yeah, indeed. And do you do that often? Are you working with many people who have cancer?
Absolutely, yes, all the time.
Yeah, great.
They seek us out because it's part of their journey, and we tend to often be the last station.
Right. But it's interesting, some of the European clinics, it's almost the first thing they ask you when you come in the door is about your amalgams and your root canal work, isn't it?
Absolutely. Here they just, raise their eyebrows at you if you mention it to the GP or...
Oh, sure.
So there's very little support or help in that sense or understanding.
Okay. I just want to ask a little bit before we get to the end about gum disease, gum health. It seems to be something that people are discovering has a lot more to do with our general health and well-being than anybody ever dreamed. It goes alongside the developments in understanding of the role of the gut flora in our overall health. Do you want to say a little bit about that and what you can offer to help with that?
Sure, absolutely. That's a very interesting topic, actually, because what I'm seeing a trend in mainstream dentistry and that they are accepting this fact, what you've just mentioned, more and more, how it impacts your general health. And that is very positive. Out of any sort of speciality in dentistry, it's within the gum disease speciality I'm seeing it the most progress, to be honest with you.
Okay.
In the sense that they are going more and more towards our holistic views.
Right.
It's sort of, in my view, it's the diabetes of the mouth, isn't it? Your heart, blood circulation, and gut flora, as you say. There's such a close link between bacterium of the mouth and the gut bacterium. We tend to be a bit more drastic, shall we say. If a tooth is severely gum diseased and there's a tremendous amount of bone loss around that tooth, it's going to be very difficult for that patient to keep the bacteria away because it's so deeply seated.
Right.
And through the best of efforts of your cleaning, you just can't get that deep. You can't reach that deep with your floss and with your brush. So, but the ones that we feel can be saved, we tend to treat with ozone and calcium, localized calcium placement.
So the calcium is a kind of reinforcement in a way. It's helping support good health, and where the ozone's a disinfectant.
Exactly, absolutely. And the calcium also, what it does is that it changes the pH quite drastically.
Okay.
And it promotes basically anaerobic bacteria death because they just can't survive very well in those in that environment. But of course, the trouble is, you have to repeat this procedure and it does disappear off and then they can sort of come back in again. So it's a combination therapy, really. And unfortunately, still regular visits, to the hygienist, unfortunately.
Right. But what would you say is actually driving the poor gum health? What are the things that people are doing in their lives that are leading to, presumably naturally, if they had a good diet and they lived a good lifestyle, they wouldn't have bad gums. So what are people doing that's driving this?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's not just about plaque removal and so on. Nutrition is so key, the way I understand it. It's plays a much bigger role than mainstream dentistry will ever admit to. So I've seen people, you know, that change their diet and they've followed our protocol with the ozone and all that, you know, mm-hmm. the calcium. And the improvement, I mean, it takes time. The trouble is with nutrition, as I'm sure you know, it just takes time. It's not going to happen overnight.
Not a quick fix, no. And do you think there's a role? I mean, people are very happy to buy those luminous coloured bottles of mouthwash, which have heaven knows what in them, and to use those to keep them all fresh and lovely. But I mean, presumably, that has a role in affecting our good bacteria, the ones we actually want around.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right there. It's a big problem. It is a real big problem. And why do people even use it? A lot of times it's for bad breath. And
right.
In actual fact, when you kill off the good bacteria, you're actually promoting bad breath, because then the anaerobic bacteria can grow. They have
right.
more room to grow.
How crazy is that?
Yes, and then there's the alcohol in those mouthwashes as well.
Right.
But the biggest problem is, as you say, is that it's not targeted. It just kills off. And I don't find they kill anaerobic bacteria, which are the real problems with gum disease.
Okay, so they're actually killing off the good ones more than the bad ones. Oh, dear.
That's what I have found, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, good to hear you back that up. It doesn't make any sense to me, but yeah, there's plenty of that stuff selling. One last thing to ask about. I noticed that you use ultrasound as a diagnostic technique at the clinic. Can you tell us why and what you're using it for?
Sure. So it's a older piece of equipment that works quite well for its age, to be honest with you. I have to go back to tell you, you know, what cavitations are. So cavitations
okay.
are basically focal infections of the bone. And why do they happen? Well, if we extract a tooth in a very, very traumatic manner, or if the person has had a blow to their bone, to the jawbone,
yes,
because of, say, an accident, they fell off a bike or they played sports when they were little, whatever. So some kind of trauma was caused to this the jawbone. You're basically compromising the blood supply there, and that blood supply may never grow back in again.
Right.
And that's how the infection can grow. And the bone often gets eaten away, sometimes 100%, sometimes less so. But the classic sign is that it gets eaten away. So the result is a hollow area in the jawbone.
Right.
And that hollow area can be picked up by this ultrasound machine,
Okay, so if you find one of these, presumably it's just a bad idea to have a hollow area because it's somewhere where things can go wrong, basically. It's not really alive in the way that your body should be. It's just a kind of dead spot. So if that's the case, what can you do about it?
Yeah, so you mentioned the hollow area. The problem with the hollow area there is that there's no blood supply and these anaerobic
right.
bacteria can grow in it. Yes, and the endotoxins they produce and all that is really, really bad for you, and been linked to cancer and all sorts of things. And people tend to present with very vague symptoms, not often pain,
right?
Localized pain, which is a difficult part, and which is why it's so controversial as well. But what can we do about it? Well, we can. A couple of things. We now I give options now. Traditionally. It was operated on these areas by the Monroe Halls and quite successfully, the way I understand it. So here's where the whole holistic thing is quite important, actually,
mm-hmm.
really, because the reason why I don't only offer surgery is because of some women, for instance, have a hormone problem, or then perimenopausal.
Yes.
Lack of vitamin D is quite common in England. So operation is not always conducive for these people or you know, suitable.
Okay.
And some people struggle really badly after an operation. So So then we offer ozone treatments. So what I can do is that I can sort of drill into the bone with a needle,
mm-hmm.
and all done under local anaesthetic, and then I can inject in ozone into that area. And if it's not too deeply seated, quite successfully.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is now, of course, that they have to come back at least 6 sessions once a week for that sort of thing.
Okay.
Whereas surgery is sort of a one-off.
One-off.
It can reinfect, but it tends to be one-off.
Okay, but once they've had that procedure, say they've been through their 6 sessions and you're satisfied that the job's done, is that then permanent, or are they likely to get problems there again in the future?
Yeah, unfortunately, these areas can reinfect, whether it's through surgery, done through surgery, or ozone. So, you know, when they come back, say for a 6-month check, we can then check with an ultrasound scan again.
Yes.
See the healing side of things.
Right, right. Okay. Anyway, that's very interesting. Thank you for telling us about that. We're out of time, but I'd like to just come right back to the subject we began with, the regulations around mercury. So after decades of work by campaigners to halt the use of mercury amalgams, we now have this ban that's a ban on using it with children or pregnant or breastfeeding women. So this is a major breakthrough in one sense, but as is usual, it's after several generations have been subjected to the risks. Do you see this as the first step towards an inevitable total ban at some point in the future? Or, given the immense resistance of the profession, once we get out of the umbrella of the EU law, could it simply stay as it is, or even go backwards, start to reverse?
Yes, that's a really good question. I'm hoping it's going to phase out completely. Because it is really what they're doing is that they're phasing it down, and that's what they call it, actually, phasing down. I'm hoping, and I just think it's inevitable that it has to be. It just has to be. Moving to the UK was a very good decision. I love living in this country, but there's a lot of conservative approaches to things.
Yes.
And you just find that we just sort of a bit, you know, maybe a decade behind.
At least. Well, you talked about, you know, it being banned in Sweden years ago. And some things we are way behind. And I'm very conscious of this all the time, and I'm pushing for it to be otherwise.
Absolutely. I just don't see any other way around. I really don't. If, you know, we'll be just left the only country who hasn't done it.
Yeah, could happen, I'll tell you. Anyway, let's hope not. Let's hope you're right. It is inevitable, and that this will be a total ban not too far from now. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been very interesting to talk, Beta. Thank you very much. We learned a lot about what you do there, and some very interesting things you offer, and say a fantastic pioneering place, the Munro Hall Clinic, that's been sort of setting the standard for this type of work for a long time. And so really great to hear all about it.
Thank you very much, Robin, for your time. And I'm really pleased I could just share some of what we do and, just educate people as much as we can, really.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye, Beta.
Cheers, Robin.
Bye. Look on our brand new website at yestolife.org.uk for links to material mentioned in today's show. Just select the Yes to Life show from the homepage. Last call for the Yes to Life Retreat and Restore Day at Bhaktivedanta Manor near Watford on the 22nd of June. A fabulous and fun day. Look on yestolife.org.uk and choose Educational Programme for full details and booking, or look on the Yes to Life Facebook page. And please block out the weekend of the 30th of November and the 1st of December, which is when this year's Yes to Life annual international conference will be held in London. Full details of the programme and speakers will be released very shortly. And as I just mentioned, Yes to Life has a brand new website, so do take a look through all the resources now available. hope you enjoyed the show and will want to join me again next week. Goodbye.